It's interesting what we do to things. For example, ALS is a horrible disease, as all diseases are. The nervous system, it makes you not able to function in many ways. In order to raise money to find a cure for it, to raise awareness, like nobody knew what it was before, but to raise awareness, they do this ice bucket challenge where they take an ice bucket and they pour it over somebody's head. And I guess as a result of doing that, you donate money. I don't get it. I don't see the connection between a nervous system disease and dumping ice water on somebody's head. I'm not being insensitive. I just don't get the connection.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
I can see if you have a headache, you dump ice water on your head.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show, he said. He said knowingly.
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you so much, Julie. Do you ever sing in the shower, and then you turn the water off, and you realize you really can't sing at all? But somehow, when the water's coming out of the shower, you sound pretty good. I think it's the echo. I think it's the tiles in the bathroom that give you that little extra zits. Is it? No, zip. Zits. Nobody needs extra zits, actually. Unless you want to raise money for that by dumping ice water. I have no idea. Do you ever sing in the car? There's no tile in there. And when the radio's on, when you're singing along to something, it sounds like you're doing some kind of pathetic harmony, but the radio is louder than your singing is, and you actually say to yourself, I could actually cut a couple albums here. I could cut some records. I got a pretty decent voice here for a car. And then you turn the radio off, and you continue singing to yourself, and you realize, hey, I really suck at this. I really can't sing. Oddly enough, when the radio's on, I seem to be able to sound just fine. But by myself, I can't sing. And you come to that realization. It's a horrible thing. It's realizing all the things that you can't do. I'm going to make a list of all the things in my life that I can't do. There is something that I can't do that I've regretted my entire lifetime. And you're going to say, Ron, what's the matter with you? How come you can't do this? I cannot snap my fingers at all, at all. My fingers, I'm trying right now. That's it. That's it. All you hear is burning flesh. It's like I'm wearing corduroy with a large, obscene crotch. It's just rubbing and nothing's happening. I'm making rubbing sounds, but I'm not snapping, man. There's no snapping going on. I don't know whether my skin is defective on my fingers, or it's like I'm rubbing off my fingerprint marks or something. I don't know. I can't make the snapping sound. And people will come up. It's a great conversation piece when you're meeting somebody, by the way, and you want them to touch you. They'll touch your fingers. That's how it starts. Then it gets into sex and you have children. But they say, Ron, how come you can't snap your fingers? And then they take my, they bodily grab my fingers and they try to make my skin and my fingers make a snapping sound. And they very quickly realize, hey, you really can't do this. I said, yeah, you know, I don't know what your problem is. There are some people that can't whistle. I can do that. But there are some people that actually can't make that sound coming out of their mouth. It's their snapping fingers deficiency is that they can't whistle. So then I'm thinking, well, now I feel human because there are things that a lot of people can't do. And there are things that I can do, and there are things I can't do that other people can do, and it all kind of equals up. Let me ask you a question. What are you wearing?
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
Now, if you're a parent of a child and you ask your child this, that's perfectly fine. If you're an older adult and you're asking a strange kid this question, you'll be arrested. So here we go. I have a question for you. Do you know that one of the greatest inventions of all time, which I think they discovered in space or for space or something, Velcro. It's the fabric melds into itself and it fastens really tight. And a lot of things are made of Velcro now. There is something that you wear that is made of Velcro, and for the life of me, I can't understand why it's not done across the board. And it's on shoes. Shoes are an interesting piece of clothing, I suppose they are. Some people call them accessory. No, it's clothing. You clothe your feet with this. You clothe your feet with socks, and you clothe your feet with shoes. Interesting stuff. Here's the deal. Men, they don't give crap about shoes. Men got like two pairs of shoes, and we call them my good shoes and my knock-around shoes. That's all we got. And when do we go out and we buy new shoes? When there starts to be holes on the in the shoes that we have. And we don't even do that until it's a rainstorm, and there's like half an inch of rain on the ground, and you step in a puddle, and the water leaks through your shoe onto your sock, and you walk around all day in the most uncomfortable manner to the point where I'm going to get pneumonia. I'm going to get sick. My feet are wet. That's when a guy will go and pick up another pair of shoes. That's the way guys are. Has nothing to do with the penis. It has to do with the shoes. Women, on the other hand, or should I say the other foot, They adore shoes. They have to have at least 20 pairs of shoes. And that's minimum for a lot of ladies. And you don't even have to have a job where you're matching shoes to your dress or your skirt or your pants. Doesn't even matter. And that's just the shoes. We're not even talking about the boots that they wear. And I'm not talking about snow boots. These ladies wear boots all the time. Boots and jeans, sexy. They know it. They show it. Women have like, they have a separate closet for shoes. I don't think women dream about sex. I think they dream about storing their shoes in a provocative manner, which is, you know, I get it. So shoes are very, very important. Here's what I don't understand about shoes. We're very archaic with our shoes. And here's what's archaic about them. These stupid freaking laces. People walk around, you have to bend down. Now for me, I'm 6'3" tall. It's a long, I gotta take a flight to get down to my feet. I mean, my feet are not nearby. They're out of range. You short people who are like 5 foot tall or 4 foot 10 or something like that, you bend over, your shoes are right there. You know, you open your mouth, you're licking your shoes. Me, I gotta plan some type of a trip to get down there. It's a long way for me. So shoes are, the laces come undone, And then you have to stop. You have to bend down. And why are we doing something as archaic as tying things on our feet with string? I mean, seriously. You know, we've come so much further. We've got other stuff we can do. I wear slip-on shoes, the ones with no laces, no nothing. You slip them on your feet. They stay on. We call it a day. Why does somebody feel like bending down and tying string in your shoe is an attractive thing? I don't find that attractive at all. They did invent something called Velcro, an incredible, incredible scientific fabric thing. It's about the only thing that the fabric industry ever did that was technological. They make Velcro shoes. They make Velcro sneakers, where the shoes are fastened by Velcro. There's nothing to tie. There's nothing to lace. There's nothing that comes undone. It just sticks to itself. What a wonderful, incredible invention. I don't know who invented it. There might be a Bob Velcro somewhere. Bob, what'd you do with your life? Where were you, a teacher or working on an assembly line? Actually, I invented Velcro. My name is Bob Velcro. Oh, wow. Probably somewhere there's a Timmy Laces. I really don't know. For a long time, I had Velcro sneakers because I usually don't wear sneakers because I don't work out. I don't walk anywhere. I have no reason to move my feet. So sneakers really don't come into play. My friend John Shanahan, who does the opening and the introductions and the commercials on the show here, he's a great guy. When I was younger, he invited me to play tennis. He had an apartment in Cambridge. John, do you remember this? And he invited me to play tennis. There was a tennis court down the street in Cambridge. Who knew that they even had tennis courts in Cambridge? I would figure there'd be no room for them there. And I wore my little T-shirt and my little shorts, and Velcro sneakers. And I'm running around the tennis court. And to be honest with you, I was like maybe 40 years old, 35 years old, and I was exhausted just moving around. Can imagine what I'm like now. Yeah, I won't even tie my shoes. That's what I'm like. I can't even bend down to do that. Not because I can't, but because I don't want to. I don't find any reason to do something like that. So I wore these Velcro sneakers, and Velcro sneakers had just really come out. And I remember John looking at me and saying, "Ron, what's that on your feet?" And I said, "Well, it was my sneakers." He says, "Are those Velcro fasteners on your sneakers?" I said, "Yes." And he started laughing very loudly. And I continued to wear my Velcro sneakers for years and years, probably decades, because, again, there's no reason for me to get new sneakers. I have a pair. But I do remember people constantly saying to me, "Are those Velcro sneakers? What? You shouldn't wear those." I said, "Why?" "Well, I don't know. You just shouldn't wear them. They're just dorky. They're goofy." I see. That's goofy, but wearing string to fasten your shoes to your feet is not dorky and that's good. This is bad. Get with the times, man. If I could wear Velcro sneakers right or Velcro shoes right now, I would, but I can't find Velcro shoes, just Velcro sneakers. I have oddly wasted about 10 minutes of your time talking about shoes and Velcro, and I assume that I apologize.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today? What are you wearing? What are you wearing? What are you wearing today, today?
You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show, and that gets you a podcasting high five. It's like a regular high five, but no one knows that you did it, or cares,
or anything, really.
You know the rules of this program? You know what they are? I talk and you shut up.
Please be quiet. 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 Please be quiet.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Thanks.
If only kids were that polite. But they're not. So there you go. I was watching television last night. I watch the Cooking Channel, not the Food Network. The Food Network, I can't talk. Sorry. I'll see you. Bye. The Food Network used to be shows about these chefs like Julia Child and Pierre Comcois de Flier and other people. And Rachel Ray, that annoying little bastard, people like that. And I would learn to cook, you know, or find great interest in their cooking techniques. Lydia's Italy. Did you ever see that one? I think her name is Lydia Bastiche, something like that. She's Italian, but she speaks English. She doesn't have an Italian accent when she's cooking on the show. But when she mentions an Italian ingredient, all of a sudden she turns very Italian. It's odd. She puts an accent onto things that don't make sense. Like she'll say, "You add 2 quarts of milk, and then some chopped up onions, about two cups of chopped up onions, chopped very fine." And then we're going to add our meat. We're going to add some linguiça. So what happened to you? All of a sudden, you named a food product and you went nuts. She's, I don't get it. You put it in the oven and you bake it 350 degrees for 2 hours. And you come and you sit down and you eat it, and it's a bellissimo. What, did you have a convulsion? What happened? You said a word and you convulsed. What are you talking? It's bellissimo. All of a sudden, one Italian word, and all of a sudden you're on another planet or something in your pronunciation. I think her last name is Bastivich or something. Something I don't know what it sounds. Sounds Czechoslovakian or something. Some people do that with their names.
Yes, I have a very nice name. It's Anna Ciclolele.
Wow, what happened there? Anyway, I don't watch the Food Network because it's all challenges. It's all food challenges. Who can cook faster? Who can make a dish out of a kumquat? It's challenge. I challenge you. And I'm not into challenges when it comes to food. I don't really believe that food should be a game. I don't understand that. So I'm more into the aspect of cooking and watching people cook and prepare dishes. On the Cooking Channel, that there's more of that. So I'm watching the Cooking Channel, and they're doing a show, some kind of chef is doing a show on comfort food. And I said to myself, comfort food? What the fuck is that? What is comfort food? Is it something that you wear? Does it make you comfortable?
I don't like that food. It's not making me comfortable.
Oh, what do you want?
I want a good, comfortable food.
I don't understand what that means.
I want a comfortable food. What are you talking about? I want comfort food.
I don't understand that. Apparently, comfort food is something that you eat more or less in the winter, and it's macaroni and cheese, it's hearty soups. It's stuff that will block your veins and kill you. That's comfort. Comfort food is described in the dictionary, and a lot of you don't know what a dictionary is. It's a book's got words in it. Some guy named Webster, I think that it was a little black kid on that television show. He wrote the dictionary. And I don't know why he thinks he was so important here, that he was, I know all the words, this Webster guy. Kind of a snotty guy. He would correct everybody when they were talking. No, that's not what you mean. That's not the proper meaning. Oh, Webster, will you shut up? You're driving me nuts. Put it in a book and go somewhere, will you? Comfort food, foods high in fat and high in carbohydrates. That's all the stuff my doctor said will kill me within a few days if I continue like this. That's comfort foods. They make you feel comfortable. I think I don't want it makes me feel uncomfortable to eat that shit, but I guess it's they're comfortable. The body loves to be comforted by carbohydrates and fat. Ah, it's comfortable. It's not comfortable for me when I have to take a crap. That's not too comfortable. Comfort food to me is food that makes me psychologically comfortable, which is not necessarily in the dictionary. And those would be foods that remind me of my childhood. Your memories of your childhood, as far as food and cooking is concerned, is whatever your mother cooked, if your mother did cook. Now, back then, fathers didn't cook. That was not their job. Fathers don't cook. Fathers don't have a large collection of shoes, and they don't cook. A very sexist comment, but the way things used to be, and probably still are, for many households. Comfort foods are foods that you picture your mother wearing potholder gloves, which is a wonderful fashion statement, and you picture the oven door opening and she's pulling something out of the oven and it has an immediate aroma that you like. That's comfort food. Didn't have that in my house. My mother cooked, but she couldn't. Everything she cooked was horrible. Love my mother, wonderful lady, fine, upstanding woman. Wonderful, wonderful childhood. She gave me everything she could give me that I could tolerate. Cooking category, I'm surprised I'm still alive. It was awful. It was awful. She baked everything. We never used our stovetop because there was no reason to. The only thing that was ever prepared on the stovetop was oatmeal. Otherwise, everything went in the oven. Spaghetti, oven. Steaks, 350 in the oven until you can't eat them. Everything in the oven. Three times a week, we had a thing called TV dinners. I don't know if you remember this. Swanson was the big manufacturer. There's actually a brand called TV Dinner. And it was actually quite good. That was my comfort food. The only thing about the TV dinners, they came in foil trays. Now they're microwavable plastic, but not then. They were foil trays, and they were different compartments. And there was a major compartment for the meat. That was, the big one was the meat compartment. And then there was a small one for a potato type of mixture. Then there was another small one on the right, upper right-hand corner, for the vegetable, which was some two spoonfuls of some kind of vegetable. And then there was the prize. The center upper part, a small little compartment for the dessert. And that was always some type of hot apple pie kind of concoction. It wasn't in pie form. It was just molten lava apple crap in a small compartment. And if you ever ate this immediately when it came out of the oven, you would have like third-degree burns in your mouth. That stuff was freaking lava. I think they gathered it from a volcano. The TV dinner was something that I loved. I enjoyed because we could actually have this in front of the TV. That was why they called it that. You put it on a tray and you ate the various compartments. My favorite was Salisbury steak. Most people don't know what that is. Salisbury steak is not a steak, and there's nothing Salisbury about it. Salisbury is an English town in Great Britain, and I guess it's just a seasoned hamburger is all it is. It's a seasoned hamburger, and I love that because it had gravy. And the gravy could be used in the upper left-hand compartment, which was where the potatoes were. It was a feast. That was my comfort food. The reason it was so good and so tasty is the reason that food now is so great and so tasty. It was over-salted. It was salted to the point where it didn't matter what you were putting salt on anymore. It was just salty. It could have been anything. It could have been shoe leather, well salted, still palatable. Those were the TV dinners. That was my comfort food. Macaroni and cheese. You might as well just go to the ER, go to intensive care and eat the macaroni and cheese, because that's where you're going to end up if you eat too much of that crap. Swanson also had the fried chicken. Another cholesterol favorite. It was an excellent part of the TV dinner. Oh, those were wonderful. I remember, I'll tell you this story. I think I've told it on the air before. My grandfather passed away when I was a child, as usually the time frame involved, and an older child. Well, actually, and he passed away. He had a liver disease, sorry to say. Back then, they couldn't really do anything about liver disease. You simply died, and that was part of the food chain, I suppose. Speaking of the food chain, so my mother tells me this information. We go to the funeral and all that, and it's very sad. One of the first funerals I had been to as a child was of my my grandfather. And I didn't know what liver disease was, but apparently you die from it. And then I remember coming home in the evening, and we all changed our clothes out of our funeral clothes. And my mother started preparing dinner. She was a little bit quiet because it was her father. And and that oven turned on as it was every night. Everything goes in the oven, and eventually it comes out, and we try to eat it. So She opens the oven door, and we're sitting there waiting for the food, and she puts the food on the plate and puts the plate in front of my brother and myself at the kitchen table, and it's liver. And I looked at the liver, I looked at my mother, and I thought, I don't know if this is like in honor of his liver disease or a momentary lapse of judgment by my mother, but it freaked me out. First of all, I hated liver. Anyway, I hated liver the way my mother prepared it, by just sticking a slab of liver in the oven and calling it a day. I hated that. I hated the fact that my grandfather died from a liver disease. You throw it all together, it became something that made no sense to me. And it might have been the trigger for my entire life as I go through life since I was a child, trying to figure out why people do the stuff they do without thinking it through. Perhaps, Mom, it was one of the only nights in your life that you might have avoided preparing liver. It just doesn't make sense. So comfort food was not stuff that my mother cooked. It was stuff that my mother heated up. And that was the TV dinners. That was my comfort. To this day, when I'm driving through a strange town or a strange neighborhood out of state, I see off the major roads these nice little restaurants, tiny restaurants, and big sign out front that says home cooking. And I look at the sign and I remember what it means, home cooking, and I keep on driving quickly, very, very quickly, very quickly.
Yes, of course, you could have a podcast show host who's congenial and conversational and talks to you like you're both on the same level and discussing the issues of the day. But come on, isn't having a grumpy old bastard who hates just about friggin' everything way better? This is the Ron Van Dam Show.
I spend a lot of time on this program talking about cybersecurity because it freaks me out. The world has been thrusted into a very dangerous situation. I'm not talking about nuclear proliferation or paper perforation. I'm talking about the internet. As wonderful as it is also a seething den of scum. And we now have this entire warfare against viruses that come out of the internet. You can get a virus. I didn't have to have a virus internet when I was a child. We didn't have internet. Remington Rand had invented something called the UNIVAC. I don't know what it stands for, so don't ask me. Look it up yourself. I don't have time, nor do I care. But this computer did stuff. I don't think it did too much, but it did stuff. This computer called UNIVAC was actually the entire floor of a business building. It now, of course, our computers are the size of a chip of a fingernail. Back then, it took an entire floor of a building. So I knew this was coming. But at the same time, now we've got cyber attacks. It's not we have to worry about other attacks now with crazy people and crazy governments, including our own, by the way. Now I have to be concerned about being attacked by my computer. And thousands and millions of jobs have been created to put us on the defense against something that we created. It starts to make no sense. But I need to do interviews with people that make sense with this stuff that we've created, this evil that has risen from the ashes.
Good morning.
How are you? Good morning. How are you guys? Eric Goldstein is here, my Kaiser. Eric is a senior counselor to the Undersecretary of National Protection Programs, Director of Department of Homeland Security, and Michael is Executive Director of National Cybersecurity Alliance. These titles scare the hell out of me, but they sound good. They sound good. I'll tell you where I'm coming from before we get started here. I think that the internet is a wonderful thing, but I also think we also created a monster.
Yes.
And it's helping us be aware of things to be careful about when you're online. And cybersecurity, as far as business, personal use, the whole thing, it's a huge concern, isn't it?
You know, it really is, and this is Eric Goldstein. And thank you for having us on. And cybersecurity really is becoming part of what all Americans really need to think about every day. Yeah. Shopping, banking, really managing our daily lives is now truly online ubiquitously.
Yeah, because it's not just something that you pick up and use like a telephone. I mean, there are concerns. You have to put in security systems, the whole bit. And we hear every day about major outlets like Yahoo being hacked and major stores and such. So what can we do as regular people in protecting ourselves?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, everybody has to do the things that are within their control, right? And there are really some basic common sense things that everyone can do. And one of the things that we're promoting really strongly for every American to consider doing this October, which is National Cybersecurity Awareness Month, is to what we say, lock down your login, right? Which is add a layer of protection to your most basic credentials on your key accounts like email, banking, and social media.
All right. So when you what does that mean, what you said? I mean, how do you lock down? I mean, what are you talking about?
Yeah, there's some emerging technologies called strong authentication, right? So it's really something, you know, most Americans are used to, like, you know, putting their username, which is mostly their password, then, I'm sorry, mostly their email, then a password.
Right.
And this adds a layer to that. It could be, you know, the finger swipe on your phone before you go in. It could be a text message to your phone for an extra code that really makes it much harder for the bad guys to get into your accounts.
Okay. Because I'm always thinking along the lines of laptops and desktops. And I don't think much along the lines of smartphones, which we all use every single day for all kinds of purposes. I always think that smartphones are somewhat protected by the mobile companies that I'm dealing with.
So certainly smartphones, you know, are the makers of smartphones, the companies that provide them, are thinking about security and are doing the right things to manage these security risks. But still, users need to be diligent. And as Michael noted, there are steps we can all take, such as making sure that the way that we log into our smartphones is secure to ensure that we minimize the likelihood that our smartphone could be accessed by a bad guy, for example.
Okay. So, so passwords seem to be key as far as the layperson is concerned.
You know, passwords are, you know, have been, you know, the convention to create security for a long time, and we're hoping that changes to these, you know, the multi-factor or stronger authentication over time. So, you know, what I say to people about passwords is they know that they're supposed to have a long, strong password, and they know whether they've done that or not. They know if their password is still their dog's name or their kid's birthday, and they've just got to make them better. They've got to make them longer. A passphrase is fine. Length is really critical. Having, you know, a small, a short sentence is fine. And they really need to have separate passwords for those key accounts, like their email or their banking.
Yeah, but I mean, Eric and Michael, how do I remember these multitude of passwords that are more complicated than my pets' names? I mean, I don't carry a list of these things with me as I go throughout the day.
Yeah, so one thing that's a really nice practice is now for your smartphone and your laptop, there are actually applications that you can download where you can actually input each of your passwords and actually protect that application. And so instead of carrying around a note card, for example, with all of your passwords on them, you can actually have an application on your smartphone that you log into just like you do for your bank account that actually lists your passwords in a secure way. And that way you can have different passwords for each account but access them when you need them.
Can those be hacked?
You know, it's a fair statement that nothing is totally invulnerable, but certainly having different passwords for each of your accounts is a better practice than having the same password for all of them.
Yeah, and I might add to that, just, you know, the idea about around security is to build up as much resistance as possible, right?
Yes.
So, yes, you know, those are called password managers, and sure, any system conceivably can be hacked.
Yeah.
But anytime you add a layer of protection, it makes you that much more protected, and it makes you more defended, right? And that's really the key here. So, you know, people can be at risk in any number of ways, but the more protections you add, the better off you are.
Okay. I'm fairly smart, and so are you. And I think that's where it stops, because I'm concerned about kids and young adults, and I'm concerned about seniors who can be duped quite easily because they don't have the experience to understand what the dangers are. And I guess that's why we're doing this National Cybersecurity Awareness Month. I don't think they understand until something happens to them.
You know, I think there's some truth to that, but there's also some good news in this. We recently did a survey with Microsoft of teens 13 to 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
And, you know what their top safety concern was online? That someone would gain unauthorized access to their account.
Really?
So they're actually thinking about these issues,
right? Good.
At some level. And that's actually very encouraging to those of us that do education and awareness.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, you know, the kinds of things that people fall prey to online are the kinds of scams that have been out there for a long time. they're really accelerated online, right? The reach of the bad guys is accelerated. You know, it almost becomes like a direct mail campaign to, you know, try and fish people and get them involved. Yeah. So we have to keep educating people. And I think people have to look out for people. You know, if you have seniors in your family who you feel might be at risk, you need to, you know, sit down with them and make sure that they have security precautions and they understand some of the risks that are out there.
When I talk to friends and other people who aren't friends, the biggest scam going on right now, and I just wanted to bring it up for a second, is you get a phone call and they identify themselves as Windows and they say your computer is slower, and everybody says themselves, yeah, it's been a little bit slow lately, and then they say that they have been authorized to help you out and they want to get into your computer, and of course that's got to be a scam. I get that call once a week, and a lot of other people do. These scams are very dangerous, aren't they?
You know, they really are, and that one of the most important areas here is to teach diligence and to make sure that all consumers, young adults, seniors, are diligent about these risks and understand that there are, in fact, fraudsters out there who want to gain access to their computers, their smartphones, and being suspicious, having some due degree of diligence for these threats. And importantly, when people hear about these scams or receive one of those calls, they should report them, either to the Federal Trade Commission, to local law enforcement. But these are criminal acts, and people should be conscious of them and report them as such.
Yeah, but they're mostly coming from overseas. I mean, they're all accents. I'm sorry, that sounds a little racist, but they're all accents, and I figure they're all coming from overseas, and I know that there are giant call centers overseas that do this, and they're very difficult, if not impossible, to stop.
Yeah, that's true, and really, you know, obviously the one of the great benefits of the internet is made a global community, and that can also be the downside at some level, right? Because you know, access to people around the globe is greatly facilitated by the internet. Yeah. But I think it's really, you know, just there's some simple things here too. People should know, you know, Microsoft is not going to call you and tell you there's something wrong with your computer. Right. People should just know that threshold, right? That's a really simple, you know, and, you know, we like to say around phishing emails, when in doubt, throw it out. I would say in this case, if you have any doubt about who's on the phone, hang up.
Yeah.
You know, you're under no obligation to be nice to someone who called you when you didn't ask to be called. And I don't want people to be rude, but I think, you know, people should just understand that these folks are out there, and they're after your money, right? And everybody wants to protect that.
Yeah, they always have been after my money. It's I guess we don't even have to say that anymore. StaySafeOnline.org. StaySafeOnline.org. There you can have all your questions answered and find out how you can protect yourself in various ways. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. It's still scary stuff to me. It's worth it. It's not worth it. I don't know. Time's up. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. Until then, I wish you peace. Bye. Goodbye now. Bye. Go do something else now. Go. Go away. See ya. Bye-bye. Bye. Goodbye now. Bye.
It was unbelievably painful.
Whatever.